Welcome to Tuesday Topics. I'd like to begin by thanking our recorders in Orlando, Florida. I'd like to thank Dave Williams, who is our erstwhile editor from the UK. And I'd like to thank George Byes from Talking Community, who's made this chat program available to us on the ACB Radio website. I'd also like to thank all of the folks who are in the room. We have a good crowd this evening. Last week, it was decided by the group that what we would talk about this time are some books that have moved us, that we've really liked, that we found interesting. And I really don't want to set ground rules for what books people talk about or what they say about them, because I think that would lessen the spontaneity of the activity. But the bottom line here is to try to not only talk about those books, but also indicate why the books were particularly interesting to you and what about those books was interesting, and even if you can, what kind of impact those books had. So, eventually it will become my turn, but for the moment, let me see who's quickest on the talk button, and let's go ahead and talk about the books that have influenced you. Go for it, guys.
I'm Dave McElroy, Visalia, California. Good evening. And I'd like to talk a wee bit, especially since the topic of Blind Justice was just brought up, and some people find it's a great show and some find it to be appalling, and I suspect several of us kind of in between. So I'd like to discuss an author rather than a book that I've been, or a particular book that I've been reading lately. First of all, I tend to go for books that have some modern historical bent. In other words, I like to read books that were written in the 1930s, 40s, 50s in a contemporary vein. With that in mind, I was wandering through a book shared not long ago, and I found an author by the name of Baynard Kendrick. Baynard, the first name, I will spell B-A-Y-N-A-R-D. Last name Kendrick, like Debbie Kendrick, but it's Baynard Kendrick, K-E-N-D-R-I-C-K, Baynard Kendrick. And Baynard Kendrick wrote books from the 1930s to the mid-1960s, although his character, his blind character, did drop in a 1961 book. Some of those books are available on Bookshare. And basically, I found it fascinating because this is a World War I veteran in his book that he wrote about. And the World War I veteran who had lost his vision and then went on to do some pretty strange things in my view. This was the predecessor to Longstreet, and I've done some Yahoo research on it, and that was the authors of Longstreet basically point to him as their model. There's a persona, Duncan McLean is his name. That's right. That's the character's name. Kind of fascinating, and it also gives you a good idea of two things. One, what New York was like in the 1930s, 1940s, 1950s, what New York City was like, what the subway system was like. And also what the technology of the day was and was not. And that's that was very fascinating. I think they're basically worth reading for a point of interest if you're interested in gray autographs. I'm still trying to run down what an Ediphone was. E-D-I-P-H-O-N-E. Ediphone is an Edison phone. That would appear as the first talking recorder, I believe, of some kind, recorded on discs.
Give us a couple of the titles of the books, even though you're primarily recommending the author. A couple of titles might be helpful to folks.
Absolutely. The titles that come to mind are Odor of Violets, Odor, O-D-O-R, Odor of Violets, 1941. The Last Express, The Last Express, 1936. Actually, that's the one you should read first. The Last Express, read that one first, then Odor of Violets. Let's see, what are some of the other titles? Out of Control is another one. Blind Allies, Clear and Present Danger, same title as later by Tom Clancy, but Clear and Present Danger, that was one of the later ones. He also did a couple of nonfiction books. Well, one in particular I haven't read yet called Lights Out, which was actually his view of a blind World War II vet being rehabilitated in 1945. That one might be an interesting read. Lights Out.
Thank you, sir.
This is Gary Wood from Michigan. I like historic things. I think the ones that he mentioned sound like would be very interesting. I like historical novels. I was interested in books that I got from the library here in Michigan. Most of them were on tape, but one of the books was on most of them are on cassette tape, but one of them was on one of those flexible discs that they had from the library. But it was called Centennial. Author's name was John Jakes, I think. There were several of those books, and I thought they were very interesting. And when I was a kid in school, I think one of my first book reports was on Tom Sawyer. And I read that in Braille from the library. And then there was Huckleberry Finn. I didn't have a talking book machine at the time. My dad read that one to me, but then I liked that book. And then also other books I've liked over the years. First talking book I think I listened to was on record was Justin Morgan Had a Horse, I believe. That was a good one. And then I had read kind of religious novel, Silver Chalice. I don't remember who wrote that one, and I don't remember the Justin Morgan thing. But then one of the books that were kind of scary or shocking in a way is George Orwell's 1984, if any of you guys remember that one. And then some of the other books, there was a self-help book I liked to read. I got from the library on tape, I'm Okay, You're Okay, something like that. So, yeah, there have been a lot of different books I've read over the years.
Well, it's very difficult to just come up with a book or even a series of books that does it for me. But if I were to say ones that that I found incredibly entertaining and clever and those kind of things, first thing I would say is all of the Lord of the Rings books, from The Hobbit all the way through Return of the Kings. By R.R. Tolkien. I don't think I have to spell that for you, Paul. Great, spectacular writing, excellent character development, kept me running the whole time. Just really, really enjoyed those books. And kind of on the other end of the spectrum was Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy series. Again, incredible writing. I think somebody has to have been smoking something seriously wicked in order to write that kind of thing. But it captured my interest and kept me going from beginning to end. So certainly those books have to be on my list of favorites. I'd add to that, though, some other books that I read just for the fun of it. Any of the Gregory Isles books I find interesting to over the years. And I'll leave it at that for now, but I don't promise not to butt in again shortly.
Hi, this is Larry Turnbull in Orlando. I would have to agree over 200% with Brian on the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy series. That was an awesome series to beat them all. That was written by Douglas Adams, and I read all the books from the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy all the way to Mostly Harmless, and that's just an interesting series in itself. It really keeps you on your toes. Another author I really like is Stephen King, and I've read pretty much just about all of his books. You name it, I pretty much read it. My favorite one was the Dark Tower series, which started with The Gunslinger and ended up all the way to the title book, The Dark Tower, and that's 7 books. Later on, I can give a complete list of those books if anyone's interested. He also wrote other great books, such as A Bag of Bones, and also Dreamcatcher, that became a famous movie, Black House, and just to name others, quite a great author. I'll probably have more later. I'll let somebody else have it now.
Hey, speaking of Stephen King, it's Anthony here. A couple of books that became movies as well, too. Stephen King's Thinner, Firestarter, Carrie, which is an awesome book. I liked Firestarter, too. That was a good book. Pet Sematary, Christine. The Green Mile. Also, he did one called, I believe it was on the Sci-Fi Channel last week, I believe it was Rose Red, which is a wonderful movie as well, too. And Stephen King is a good author. if anybody's interested, like, in Star Wars books, you know, such and stuff like that, I believe the... One of the New Jedi Order books is by Kevin J. Anderson, I think his name is. And it's one of the, there's a series of the Jedi Academy. There's, not the New Jedi Order, I'm sorry, the Jedi Academy trilogy series, Star Wars as well, too. Which will be coming out next month. So that's interesting. I'm looking forward to that. Because I get a lot of those audiobooks on tape. The Da Vinci Code by Dan Brown. And there's another book, which is called Angels and Demons, as also by Dan Brown.
This is Pam Drake in Visalia, California. And I tend to read in spurts, so I really had to think what books I really have made an impression on me. And I came up with one that I must have read when I was about 11. It was 1960 or 61. It was an adult. It was a book intended for adults. So of course, coming from the Library for the Blind, they weren't very explicit back in 1960, 61. And I tended to read on an adult level when I could get those books. But this particular book was called, excuse me, I Begin Again. I still remember the author's name. It's Alice Bretz, B-R-E-T-Z. It was on the old vinyl talking book, the old 33 and a third discs. And it was about a woman who had gone blind, and she picked up some kind of infection, some kind of virus from working in her garden. And essentially it went into how she became, how she adjusted to blindness. I suspect she was in her 50s or 60s, so there wasn't any near what we have. Oh, she had talking books, she had, but I don't remember there being a whole lot of talk about rehab the way there is today. And she and her husband had quite a comfortable life, and he used to, so she probably didn't need employment, let's put it that way. And it takes her into the beginning of her adjustment to blindness. Then she discovers her husband dead of a heart attack, and he was a medical doctor. No, this is not a mystery. It just goes on to how she learned to deal blind, first with her husband, then without her husband, and how she would do things like that today would be, like if she were interrupted while typing a letter, if the phone rang, she would write the word telephone, and then she would just go on to the thread as near as she could pick it up. This was especially when she was writing to family and friends like her son. And she talked about how she responded to certain, say, restaurants where she had not appreciated the cooking much as a sighted person, and others because she didn't appreciate the decor, and others where she had, and she did notice, I'm trying to remember, like I say, this is 40 years ago. And she really didn't, I don't recall whether she noticed a difference, but she did notice that it was an issue. How she, you know, having seen the restaurant and having, I think she pretty much found it the same. She liked or didn't like the food still based on her visual memories. I found it to be a very good book.
Thank you very much. One quick comment to the Douglas Adams fans. I don't know if you guys are aware that posthumously another Douglas Adams book has come out, which contains a whole new Hitchhiker's section.
And the title is?
Well, I don't know, Brian. I'll have to look it up. I've scanned it, so so I should be able to figure it out. But I don't remember the title at the moment. But I do possess it, which means that I'll put it on the list.
Good evening. This is Wayne Thompson from West Covina, California. Let's see. What books have affected me a lot? Well, pretty much, I'm a novel person, generally. My favorites are, as I was talking earlier, before almost everyone arrived, I'm a big fan of Stephen King, and I've read practically everything of his. I haven't read the last three of The Dark Towers. My favorite by him was it. I could read that again. Good reader, good story, things like that. But another a series that I really like, and I'll read every 10 years or so because it's so good, is the Wagons West series by Dana Fuller Ross. That's DanaFullerRoss. And it starts, it starts with the, wagons, people from the East Coast going out to Oregon, and then it just follows, the settlers who came out on the wagon train back in the late 1830s. And then later on, a prequel to that series was written. But as I say, I'll read that every 10 years. Now also, another one I'll read every 10 years is, as Gary said, the John Jake series, The Kent Family Chronicles. I felt that's awful good. And then another series I liked was a series about a family known as the White Oaks in Canada, written by an author named Maisel Delaroche. And I like certain, but personally, I'm a big Western fan, Louis L'Amour especially. I love murder mysteries, and well, that's me right now.
Pam again. I also appreciated, and I do not know how to spell the author's name. It's been several years since I read this. Herman Wouk, The Winds of War, and War and Remembrance. Those were quite fine. They were, I really enjoyed, though they were books, Wayne, you reminded me of the fact that I couldn't put them down. So I'll leave that for someone else to get in for now.
Herman Wouk's most famous book was The Kane Mutiny.
That was a good movie back in years ago when I saw it.
Oh, that is fantastic story. Oh, boy, that was good.
This is Shelley Justice in Winter Garden, Florida. On a totally different note, I'm a novel reader as well. I read for relaxation and enjoyment, so I don't want to think about it a lot, just enjoy it. And I get all my books through the Talking Book Library, and I use the website. And it's hard to come up with a real favorite because I have a book anywhere I go. But one favorite series of mine, the author is Diana Gabaldon or Gabaldon. Different people pronounce it different ways. It's D-I-A-N-A, G-A-B-A-L-D-O-N. And it's called the Outlander series. There are five of them. So far, I think she says there are two more coming. The first one was The Outlander, Dragonfly in Amber, The Voyager, Drums of Autumn, and The Fiery Cross. And the story, briefly, is it starts right after World War II, and it's about a married couple. They're English, and they decide after the war, she'd been a nurse and he was a historian, and they'd been apart during most of the war. So they take a second honeymoon into Scotland, and they go up into the Highlands. And while she is searching for plants, she likes to study herbs, and while she's looking for these plants, she finds this circle of stones, and she touches them, and she gets thrown back in time, back to the 1740s. And it is just a fabulous story. I just loved it. Covered all five of them. I couldn't put them down. She goes back and she gets involved with these Highlanders that are they're fighting against the English. They're trying, of course, to get their independence. And she ends up married to a Highlander. And it just, all the books, and throughout the five books, she goes back and forth from one time to another. And they're just wonderful. I recommend it. Probably the ladies would like them more because they're romance, but they're exciting as well. I liked them so much I emailed the lady.
Cool. I got four of the five, Shelley. I got The Fiery Cross, Drums of Autumn, Dragonfly in Amber, and The Outlander. What was the fifth one?
Well, actually, it was the third one you missed. It's called Voyager. V-O-Y-A-G-E-R?
Yep, I think so. There's actually a sixth one, you know. It's not directly a part of the series, but it's an episode
featuring Lord whatever his name is in London. I don't know if you've seen it.
Lord John Gray and something about the private matter. I don't think that's part of the series. It's another book. She has two more in the series coming out, but they're not, I don't think either one of them has been published yet.
Another series I enjoy, this is Wayne from West Covina, and I can't remember the author's name, unfortunately, but the series is called the Cat Who series. And when I first came across it, I thought it was a series for children. Well, not hardly. No, not hardly at all. It's a story about this fellow who is who was a reporter on a newspaper, but for I guess he became an alcoholic, and now he's over that. He starts at this one news, this other paper, newspaper, finds out the editor is an old friend of his. And in the first two books, he discovers these two Siamese cats. And after that, there's about, well, I know at least there were 16 volumes a few years ago, and I wouldn't be surprised if there were more. But I forget the author's name.
Wayne, it's Lillian. I believe that's with one L. Lillian Jackson Braun, B-R-A-U-N. I love those books. I was going to mention them later on. And once you get over the idea that a cat can help someone solve a mystery, you've got to suspend your disbelief. And especially if you're a cat lover. Because a couple of my friends are. If you're a cat lover, which I am, you will really get a kick out of them, because the way that the one cat leaves clues to help him unravel some of these deep, dark mysteries that he gets into, that he discovers, is great. And the last... No, it's not the last book now. A friend of mine is very... has read every book. And she wrote Ms. Braun. And she said... You know, it might be fun to have a blind, I know we're not talking about blind people or blind characters, but she said there might be a blind character would be fun in this book. So Mary Ann didn't hear for a while, and then she contacted, then she got a letter from Lillian Jackson Braun, and she said, would you please critique for me? I'm writing a book with a blind character. Now, the character was very minor, but she did her research, and Mary Ann was very impressed. She also got an autographed copy, and I have read several of them. I certainly haven't read all of them. I've only read seven or eight, but they're just plain, well, they're fun, and they're just suggestive enough that you read between the lines, which means they're not childish, but teenagers could read them, if you know what I mean. I really love those books. In fact, I got to go check and see. I've been getting them from my the local transcribing service here, and I do need to see if I know I'm missing out on some, but I got to remedy that.
I wanted to mention David Baldacci. Last Man Standing was one that I read last year. Several others of his. Always well written, always hard to put down. David Baldacci. And the spelling of that name is B-A-L-D-A-C-C-I.
Thank you, Brian. We didn't mention any of the actual titles of the Cat Who books. I've been racking my brain. I know that one of the more recent ones is The Cat Who Played Brahms. Another one is The Cat Who Went Underground. Perhaps you guys might mention, let's not do all 16, okay, but if you can give me two or three more titles.
The Cat Who Could Read Backwards, that was the first, and it sets the stage for how he came to adopt the male Siamese. The Cat Who Sang for Birds was another. There are a lot of them.
Sounds like they'd be interesting books.
Well, everybody has their own taste. I couldn't suspend sufficient disbelief to read them, and I would classify myself as a cat lover as well, but couldn't get there.
Does anybody remember in the past, in their childhood, reading the little house, I think I remember this back when I was going to school, the teachers would read it, the Little House on the Prairie, Laura Ingalls Wilder books.
I never read any of the books, but I was a fan of the show. I absolutely loved it to the point that, this is no joke, the night I went into labor with my son, Little House on the Prairie was on, and I was feeling pretty bad, and I told my husband, we are not leaving this house until Little House on the Prairie is over. Fortunately, my son waited until the next morning.
That was good of him. Greater love hath no man. I've read some of them, and actually the books are the books are very interestingly written, and are kind of a cool series. I'm thinking the first one is actually The House on Plum Creek, but I may be wrong.
Laura Ingalls Wilder did an article years later. I was in high school, and one of our teachers read it to us, wherein she talked about her life in the present time, which would be like in the late 60s. Her husband, Al Manzo, was still driving a car at 80-something, and she was doing fantastic, and life had not slowed them down. And it was quite interesting to see how they had aged very gracefully.
This is Rachel, and I'll throw a few things out here while I have the floor. Of course, the Harry Potter series was a good series just for fun. That was actually one I never thought I would get into. I got one of the books for Christmas and kind of held off on it, and you know, people were saying, oh, it's a great series. I held on to it for a while, didn't unwrap it. One day I was bored looking for a book to read, and this was the abridged version. No, actually it wasn't. I take it back. It wasn't the abridged, but it was the audio tape that they had given me, and I don't know how many nights of sleep I lost over that. The version, actually it was the one read by Stephen Fry over in the UK. I've since read all 5 books. The 6th one's coming out. Another series I like that I haven't finished, actually, is the Ender's Game series by Orson Scott Card. The interesting thing about that is you have some of the characters in the books, and what Orson Scott Card does with 2 of the books is he takes the same story and he tells it from a different perspective, from the perspective of a different character. I know Paul is aware of this. We've talked about it a little bit. One in the perspective from the viewpoint of Ender, and the other from the viewpoint of being another character in the book. And that was kind of interesting. I haven't read that whole series yet. Anything Star Trek I like. Some of the books, Next Generation books, by Peter David, I believe. He's got, I could be wrong on this, I believe he wrote Imzadi, and I can't remember which other ones he's written, but you can pretty much be assured that anything Star Trek I'll like. One from the old series is Spock's World that I really like, and I do not remember who the author is on that one. And just something completely off the wall for nonfiction. I actually started doing this for my karate class a long time ago. And one of the books I had to read for class was a book that was written by the grandmaster of our system. Our system is Okinawan Shirinru. Paul, I'll try to get all these spellings to you. But it was written by the grandmaster of our system named Shoshin Nagamine. And the book, again, is Essence of Karate Do, and it was all about the beginnings of the style and how it all came to be, and that was really interesting. It also talked about the techniques, so it's pretty much the one book that we tend to use for everything kind of historical we need to know.
Okay, Dave Williams here in the UK. I'm a bit of a sci-fi fan, although I have to disagree with Rachel. I can't bear the Star Trek books, although I do very much enjoy the TV series. Gary mentioned earlier on 1984 by George Orwell, which is a fantastic book, and also it's not really sci-fi, but Animal Farm by George Orwell is a good read as well on so many different levels. I like the work of H.G. Wells, The Time Machine. I think anyone who isn't moved by the closing pages of The Time Machine Can't Be Alive. I think that's a tremendous book. While we're on the sci-fi theme, Isaac Asimov, Isaacasimov, he, fantastic science fiction writer, the Foundation trilogy and the Robots trilogy. Were both great series that I particularly enjoyed. And there was something else on sci-fi. Oh yes, of course, Carl Sagan's Contact, which was made into a film with I'm trying to remember who was the wee lass who was in the film now. I forget, but certainly a great book. I'm interested in the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. I run the SETI at home software on my computer, which analyzes radio telescope data, looking for little green men. And it's intriguing. How would the human race react if we did receive a signal from outer space? So I think all those books very, very thought provoking. On a completely different note, most of the things that have been mentioned so far have been fiction. A series that I bought recently on CD, available from Amazon and other places, is Michael Palin's Travel Compendium, his Globe box set. It's basically Michael Palin was sent off by the BBC in the 80s and 90s, and also again quite recently, to make a number of TV series where he would sort of travel around the place. The first of which was where he tried to recreate the famous Jules Verne 80 Days Around the World, another great book in itself. And he did this, Michael Palin, in 1988, where he travelled around the world not using any form of air transport, and then subsequently went on to pole, where he travelled from the North Pole to the South Pole, and full circle, where he travelled the entirety of the Pacific Rim. I think Sahara followed that, and more recently Himalaya. And there's a 30 CD box set read by the author, and of course Palin, one of the Monty Python actors, so certainly an actor with pedigree and perfectly capable of reading his own material. I often find with audiobooks that I don't enjoy material read by the author very much. There are some authors that are terrible, terrible readers of their own work. So that, and one more, just as a bit of fun, probably something that nobody has heard of, Vintage Stuff by Tom Sharp. There you go. That's it's a comedy, I suppose you could call it. Very, very, very funny, hilarious, about a public schoolboy who takes everything literally. And it's definitely adult reading, but very, very funny and very, very well executed. So that's my little reading selection. But if you were to ask me tomorrow, I'd probably come up with a totally different list.
Hi, this is Allison Brunswick. My favorite has to be Patricia Cornwell, Murder Mystery, her K Scarpetto series, which is about a medical examiner. Of course, I'm a big John Grisham fan, probably have read everything he's written, and in fact, I'm currently reading The Broker. As far as the Little House series, I used to own that one. I had all the series, and I believe the first one actually in the series was The Little House in the Big Woods. That was nonfiction and is very much different than the series. The series is on TV was nothing like the books. Finally, I would say one of the authors who I stumbled upon when I was actually over on St. Simon's Island was an author that they were telling me about who lived on St. Simon's, named Eugenia Price, and she actually wrote three different trilogies. One was a trilogy about St. Simon's Island. One was a trilogy about Savannah, and one a trilogy about Florida back in the time of before the Civil War, up to the Civil War, and right after the Civil War. And those were very good books. They were kind of nonfiction, fiction related. I mean, some of the romance stuff was a little bit fiction, but a lot of the facts and historical bits about the area were true. And when I was told about the author, I actually ordered all those through the Talking Book Library, and they were three very good series.
I had read in high school John Steinbeck, The Pearl. And then, and that was a very powerful book. I mean, I just about cried. In fact, I think I did cry. Years later, when I moved to this part of California, the clerk at the bus station said, read The Grapes of Wrath, and you'll understand Porterville. Porterville was the town where we were living. And so I did indeed read The Grapes of Wrath and talk about that being powerful. And indeed, it did give me an idea of the underlying temperament and malaise, if you will, of these Dust Bowl people who came here downtrodden, and many of them continue their generation, children and grandchildren continue in that same lifestyle. No hope, no belief in anything, but you know, you get what you get and you'd best be grateful. And it very powerful books. And The Old Man and the Sea, that was another one that really affected me.
Yeah, I agree with you, Pam, about the Pearl. I read that in high school too, so how similar but how different our backgrounds probably are. And on a historical bent, I suppose, not so much a book but more a play, and since I read it, I've yearned to go to Massachusetts, so I hope there's space on Brian's living room floor for me to sleep when I go to Boston. The Crucible by Arthur Miller. What do people make of that?
I am a huge fan of The Crucible. I'm going to throw in a few books since I've been pretty quiet so far. And I want to actually talk about one in particular to begin with, which was one of the first science fiction books I read. I don't know if it is still even available. I read it in Braille from NLS, but this was in the middle 50s. The name of the book was Starman's Son, and it was written by Andre Norton. It was a book about a post-Holocaust United States, and particularly featured an individual who was something of a mutant, trying to fit into a tribe where he wasn't well trusted. Now, there have been a lot of books like that in science fiction, but this was the first thing that I'd run across that absolutely blew me away as a young kid. And I still like children's books. I like fantasy. I like science fiction. And there are two series for young adults that I would urge everyone to read. One is written by an Englishman whose name is Philip, P-H-I-L-L-I-P, Pullman, P-U-L-L-M-A-N. And the name of the trilogy is his Dark Materials. It's a fascinating series because even though it's intended for children / young adults, it's very much a book about alternative religions and how they operate with each other and the kinds of prejudices that are out there. Another series, excuse me, that I'm actually rereading now, is written by a young guy from Australia whose name is Garth Nix, G-A-R-T-H-N-I-X. And the trilogy is called the Abhorsen Trilogy, A-B-H-O-R-S-E-N Trilogy. One of my favorite books of all time, and I think that NLS has done it, is a book called A Mirror for Observers, written by Edgar, E-D-G-A-R, Pangborn, P-A-N-G-B-O-R-N. And it's about Martians who are able to change shape and who are living among us on Earth. And there are good Martians and bad Martians. And this is very much a book about their struggle, and they struggle over individual people who they think will be pivotal to the future of mankind. And in this case, it's very much written about a little boy in New England who is immensely talented, and a little girl who is too. who grow up to be young folks, but an amazing book. Pangborn has written, just a number of wonderful books as well. The Judgment of Eve is another of his books. West of the Sun is an extremely good book of his. Davy is another post-Holocaust book also written by Edgar Pangborn. And I would certainly recommend all of those. And I would really urge anyone who likes style and elegant prose to take a look at Edgar Pangborn. He is just a wonderful writer. And very much in the same vein, an elegant writer. Well, in fact, two. A guy called Jack Vance, who in fact is now blind. He's must be in his early 90s now, because the first thing that I read of his was published in, I think, 1941. So he's been writing and publishing for 64 years now, and his most recent book came out in November of 2004. He writes amazingly elegant prose and has a wonderful imagination. He's written a number of series. The most recent one to come out, which I'll probably scan for Bookshare, is called The Demon Princes. They were originally published in the 1960s and 70s, and one of them, at least, The Palace of Love, was actually serialized in Galaxy while it was being produced in Braille. But the whole series is really quite wonderful. And the other person who I was thinking about is a guy called Theodore Sturgeon, S-T-U-R-G-E-O-N. And in particular, though it has never gotten very much press, I would recommend his very last book, which is called God Body. And at the other end of that spectrum, because God Body is a very serious book, kind of about the nature of God and that sort of thing, I recommend a guy whose name is Morrow, M-O-R-R-O-W, and I'm blocking on his first name. But he wrote a series of three books. Well, his very first book is a series of short stories called Bible Stories for Adults, which is quite wonderful. But then he wrote a series of three books, the first of which was called Towing Jehovah. And it was eventually about God dying and landing in the Atlantic Ocean and having to be towed to a safe place by a tanker. But all three books are fascinating and extremely well written. One last author, a lady named Nancy Kress, K-R-E-S-S, and in particular, a trilogy that she wrote beginning with a book called Beggars in Spain. I know I turned Brian onto this series and he really liked it. The core issue of science fiction, and of this book in particular, is change one component of life and see what difference it will make. In this case, certain individuals are suddenly enabled by genetic manipulation to no longer require sleep. What does that do to a society? How does it change it? And are the consequences good, bad, or indifferent? I urge all of you to read it. It's a phenomenal study in extrapolation.
I was trying to find Morrow's first name. I've read some of his. They're wonderful. I have an author that I like for a couple of reasons. It's Robert R. McCammon, M-C-C-A-M-M-O-N. One reason I like his books is because they're just very engrossing, cover to cover. The main thing I like is that every one of them is totally different. His stories are just, they're all so different that you really don't know what you're going to get into until you're in it. And they're, I've read several. A Boy's Life, Swan Song, Gone South, Usher's Passing. Seems like I read another one. I think I have one or two on my shelf. Those are the only titles that come to my head immediately. The Stinger, I haven't read that one yet.
Oh, one other book that I should have said before, and this is in a totally different vein, also Baynard Kendrick. The title of the book is Flight from a Firing Wall. I repeat again, Flight from a Firing Wall. Now, this book was written in 1966, and it was written about somebody infiltrating Castro's Cuba and getting out alive, and it's very realistic. In fact, the book says that the only thing that was changed were the names of the people involved for their own protection. The author absolutely states that it's a true work, that it all happened. And it really is a scary look into what was going on in the 60s. And we think that history was going on while before we were born. Well, people, it was now. And while we were, kids, it really is a very powerful read. Again, called Flight from a Firing Wall. And it is also available at bookshare.org.
Dave Williams from the UK again. Just very quickly, a lot of people have mentioned Douglas Adams, and I'm no exception, and I really enjoy the Hitchhiker series, and also the Dirk Gently Holistic Detection Agency. I think there's two or three in that series, which are hilariously funny. But also, Douglas Adams doesn't stick to sort of fantasy and science fiction. I mentioned Michael Palin's travelogues earlier on, and Douglas Adams wrote a book called Last Chance to See, where he traveled to remote areas of the globe to view species that were facing extinction, and very, very moving stuff there, and completely true.
Yeah, I also read Last Chance to See. Really enjoyed it. He wrote, in fact, in his last published book, the book that was published posthumously, there is also some more nonfiction, some of which is really very interesting. He's written a kind of an update on what made him get involved in that, and some of the immense trepidation that he had in doing it, and also a lot of stuff, background on how hard it was to get him to write a word of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy when it was decided to publish it as a book, and some of the things that the publishers had to go through to make him actually cough up material. I think it's been fascinating tonight to look at the broad range of books that people have enjoyed. Dave mentioned at the beginning that we're limited to only 5% of the books that are out there, which are being put into accessible formats. I guess I think that was true, and it is to a degree true in the UK, which is one of the reasons that I sympathize with the whole group of blind folks who have gotten behind the notion that that the UK has to do more than it's doing to make a broader range of books available to folks who are blind and visually impaired in the UK. But I would argue that we're actually at a place now where there are more books available to us than there ever have been in the past, and where scanning software has become good enough that essentially, if we're prepared to take the time and do some work at it, we're actually able to read whatever we want to read. And almost as soon as people with vision can. For me, that makes a huge difference because it means that I feel liberated. Of course, it also means that I'm addicted to scanning. It's something I can't help. It's very difficult for me. I have to keep both hands folded in my lap during Tuesday topics so that I'm not scanning at the same time. I raise the issue because I think that one of the most important things to me about books is the degree to which we as blind people went 30, 40 years ago from a place where there really was an immense shortage of books to a place where, in my view, there's simply more information out there than we can handle. It would be fascinating, perhaps, and Brian and I have had some interesting debates on this subject, to talk about what literacy actually means for blind people, because it's a debate that's gone on over the past several years, and it's a debate that has ramifications for education as well. So that might be an interesting topic. However, for the moment, let me just thank everyone for bringing along their list of books. Any of you who are listening to this program who would like this list of books, If you would send me an email at edwpaul@comcast, C-O-M as in Michael, C-A-S-T, .net, N-E-T, I will add you to the Tuesday topic list and will send out a list of the books that we discussed tonight. Probably won't include every single book, but Rachel and I will do our best. The price you have to pay is you will then be on the Tuesday topics list and you will be informed in all of its gruesome detail of what our next Tuesday topic will be about. So, on behalf of all of us who are here this evening, it gives me great pleasure to thank Dave Williams for his editing work, to thank Rachel and Larry in Orlando for their recording, and to thank Mr. Byes of Talking Communities for making this chat software available to us. And for ACB Radio's Tuesday Topics, this is Paul Edwards in Miami, Florida, saying good night. Next week on Tuesday Topics, we will be talking about training of blind people. Where is it best to do that training? Should we do training in community-based organizations locally where the blind person is? Is it better for the blind person to go to a residential rehabilitation center where he or she can be away from the problems of home and can learn in an intensive way? And what ought the philosophy of this training to be? Ought it be the philosophy that is being espoused by the National Federation of the Blind and, to a degree, RSA, that philosophy being very long, very intensive, and very doctrinaire and philosophically based? Or should it put emphasis on consumer choice? These are difficult and complex questions, and questions that Tuesday Topics next week will attempt to answer, to our satisfaction at least. So please join us next week on Tuesday Topics on ACB Radio, the voice of the blind community.
Everyone at ACB Radio would like to express our deepest condolences to the family and friends of Gail Krause Edwards. Gail, age 53, of Miami, Florida, formerly of Toledo, Ohio, passed away April 16th after a brief unexpected illness. She was born March 30th, 1952, to Robert L. and Patsy J. Krause. Gail was preceded in death by her father, Robert Krause. Surviving are her husband, Paul Edwards, of Miami, her mother, Pat Krause, of Toledo, brothers, Norman R. Krause and wife Deborah of Maumee, Ohio, and Robert Krause of Lima, Ohio. Gail was the assistant director of the Office of ADA Coordination of Miami-Dade County. She was active in the American Council of the Blind, the Florida Council of the Blind, and worked avidly to further the interests of people with disabilities by expanding library access and educational opportunities for people who are blind or visually impaired. A memorial service for Gail will be held at Lithgow's Funeral Home, 15011 West Dixie Highway, North Miami, Florida, 33181, on Wednesday, April 20th at 2 p.m. Following the service, people are invited to join us for an opportunity to share our memories of Gail and for some refreshments. There will be a second memorial service held for Gail on May 28, 2005 in Toledo, Ohio. Friends wishing to remember Gail may send flowers or make contributions to the American Council of the Blind's Scholarship Fund. Contributions may be sent in her name to the American Council of the Blind, 1155 15th Street, Northwest, Suite 1004, Washington, D.C., 20005. Do not weep for me. I lived the life I chose. I loved, I laughed, and I cried. I would have lived longer if I had to choose, but the choice was not mine. So miss me, but do not cry for me. remember that life never ends, and that I shall live forever in your heart.
You are God, and I walk in, and another solitary day begins. Silent shimmers of your light reflect on everything within my sight, shining on me, shining on me. Quiet falls behind goodbye, and I'm left within the endless only I. Holy echoes of your voice chant in unison of love's rejoice, singing to me, singing to me. I am with you even when I am without you. From afar I feel everything about you. Moving away, and our separate lives take over one more day. Crystal colors leave a trace of your blessed fingertips upon my face, to sanctify me, to sanctify me.